You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. Today, Rick is speaking to us from...
Well, I'm back in sunny Florida. Not so sunny. It's been raining quite a bit here, but anyway, I'm back and we're having a Florida winter, which is like a lot of other people's summer.
Rick, let's kick off with one of the hottest things to happen, and it happened mostly in the last half of the year, silver. Why has silver just ballooned?
Well, you want the inside baseball story, or there is, I think, a good standard story that's serviceable, and that is that so many of the big guys have been using paper silver to get shorted, essentially to borrow silver, make interest on essentially lending out the spread, a carry trade, I guess. But there's so much paper silver out there that there have been acute shortages for delivery of physical. And this has been something, you know, we were talking about this 2 years ago, but it often takes the omniscient genius market years to catch up with observations that a reasonably intelligent person might make. So physical silver has been in very short supply relative to demand for physical, and of course they did have to shut down the exchanges. We talked about this as well, the cooling incident where the servers, the Chicago servers got overheated, so they had to close them down. But this coincided with some huge orders that would have demanded physical delivery of silver, and the exchange averted a crisis there. But the squeeze is still on, and even though silver doesn't enjoy the sovereign status of the favored status of sovereign investors, it's still done pretty well. It's an industrial metal, even. It's got it's right up there with copper in terms of its use in the computer business. The sort of side story, interesting story about silver, is that J.P. Morgan, which has been one of the big players making lots of money off paper gold, paper bullion, has recently staked out a very large long position, and it's moved its whole operation to, I believe it was Singapore. The idea being that J.P. Morgan is now going to put the squeeze on players that were in the same game, its cohort of investment bankers, you might say, or of hedge traders. So J.P. Morgan has kind of isolated and it's sequestered itself in Singapore, so that now it can sit on its immense inventory of real silver. And of course, it's not going to sell it cheap to all the players who get stuck needing actual silver. So that's the other story that's certainly supportive of silver. Not today, I would mention. Silver is down almost $2 an ounce, which was kind of quite a move. I think it currently trading $64.65 an ounce on the COMEX. I think it's going to come down to $63.11 before it turns around. Anyway, that's a story on silver. Gold is down, probably because they can't walk and chew gum at the same time. The guys who manage everybody's portfolios, the big players, big investors, they can't walk and chew gum at the same time. So that because they've goosed the E-mini S&Ps today, gold naturally has to react by being down. Gold down. Not too much, just about 0.4%, but still very much in the context of a bull market, for which my most immediate target is about, I think it's 51.25 basis, the February COMEX gold contract.
Now, of course, I was just thinking, if the servers had used gold instead or silver instead of copper, they'd be running cooler so you could trade more silver, because silver is more efficient at moving electricity, less resistance than copper, which generates heat.
Yeah, but then the phony lying through their teeth story that the exchange concocted would not have flown. You know, they needed an alibi, really, and overheated servers was it.
But I just thought, the irony, the silver exchange shut down because they weren't using silver. Now, of course, it's used as an industrial metal. Most solar panels use about, I think, two-thirds of an ounce of silver. So that's an important cost factor. And then, of course, things get thrown out. It's in every computer, every smartphone. Those things are just thrown into the landfill when they're used.
Yeah, there's always a story out there, you know, on silver. And I can remember at one point, or copper, for that matter, two hugely rigged markets. But the silver story was that when Kodak got slam dunked, when they got obliterated by digital photography, it was going to greatly alter the demand for physical silver. Kodak's Kodak film was darkroom stuff was all silver intensive, but of course that never happened. And the corresponding copper story was that all the places in the world that still weren't wired up for telecommunications, such as the continent of Africa, were going to bypass copper and go right to satellite telecom. And I'm not sure the extent to which that's happened, but certainly over the long term, you can see that it hasn't much slowed down the demand for copper, which seems to be enjoying some speculative demand as a hedge against inflation.
Also, they're building all of these AI data centers. Will they need all of them?
I can't see that happening. I don't think all the centers will get built, for one. For two, it's not the supply of chips isn't there. The supply of water to cool all the servers is not there. There's so many logistical problems to building out the power grid in that way, and not the least of which really is the possibility that this whole AI thing is just a bit overblown. It really is a gigantic bubble. And you can see that a lot of the, when they talk about X hundred billion dollars of investment in AI, a lot of that has been sort of money that's been passed around from larger companies to smaller subcontractors, smaller companies in the AI business, which at this point includes everybody. Even I have, I'm AI enhanced now, Rick's Picks. It helps me to essentially eliminate adverbs from my writing and put commas in the right place. So I haven't changed my advertising yet, but I'm AI enhanced now. So whether all the servers get built is an open question. There's no question, though, that the huge shift at the consumer level to ChatGPT and other iterations of AI is much more demanding on the power grid. I don't know whether I mentioned it before, but supposedly, this is a great factoid, when you ask ChatGPT a question, it takes the cooling water takes about 3 to 5 bottles of it to answer that question, and 10 times as much energy as it would to ask the same question of Google search. So there is that question: can AI, at least the power grid that's there so far and all the servers, can they deliver as many answers are demanded? But I'm enjoying ChatGPT immensely, especially when you ask it a question about some little thing that bothers you that you might otherwise see a doctor about.
One of the things I've noticed, so with Google, you're given the option to use AI, and so often the AI answers are wrong. Yes. You know, Pearl Harbor happened on December 7th, 1941. Google gets those dates mixed up. I asked once what was the cause of World War II, and it said the Germans invaded Vietnam.
So, or the Archduke got shot.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem to be all that bright. And other people I've asked have said the same thing. Oh, this was an AI-answered question? You're not sure if it's correct anymore.
Well, you know, my friend Charles Hugh Smith of TwoMinds.com has an interesting commentary out, really, that talks about how all these AI models, they're using some of their own information. They're cannibalizing, or they're let's say, cud chewers. They take information they put out, and it becomes part of the body of information, the body of data that they use to come up with answers. And of course, the more answers they come up with, the expansion of the large language model is incorporating things that it itself has put out. So it becomes just a bit, maybe I'm not sure if incestuous is the right word, but very much inbred. And the AI models are at some point going to break down simply because they're just choking on information that they put out previously.
Also in Vancouver, we had a lawyer reprimanded. She used AI to prepare a case, and it presented precedents in law that didn't exist in reality.
No kidding. Well, that's interesting because a judge, I guess, is going to think twice about allowing a black box in the courtroom to be either the defense or the prosecution. But that's, I guess, you want to say it's funny, but at the macro level, it's not funny at all when you think of what could go wrong.
And also AI experts I've talked to say, a study showed there's a 10% chance that AI is going to wipe out humanity, because its solution perhaps to water shortages could be, well, just get rid of the people using the water. Or people are wasting water that could be used to cool AI data centers.
Yeah, it's an enormous operation. I think Musk put something like $80 million into just the cooling components of his Tennessee data farm. So which does tell you that they're kind of limited as to where they can build these things. They're going to need enormous amounts of water. Who knows, down the road, somebody could build a desalination plant down in California, and it would provide desalted, unsalted coolant, but perhaps fresh water as well.
Also, Elon's solution for the heating problem with AI data centers is just move them into outer space where you have absolute zero to cool them off.
Yeah, you got to get your cooling fins out there in a rocket ship, I guess. I'm not a big believer in outer space, even though I did not too long ago tour the Houston Space Center, and they're all they're all giddy up about the planet Mars. I guess the same way we were watching television Disney back in the 50s, the moon was the closest thing, but I guess it's going to be a big task to convince the public that it's worth it to get to Mars.
A recently published NASA study finds that because the sun is going to become a red giant, that starts in about 10,000 years, and as that starts to develop, it will start stripping individual oxygen molecules out of the Earth's atmosphere, just like what happened to water on Mars.
Uh-oh. Well, we don't want to become another Mars.
Well, you know, in 10,000 years, we'll be discussing this, right?
Well, not you and I personally.
What? What? We won't be here? What? We won't be here to talk about the lack of oxygen and how Elon Super Junior XYKKAP, his next son's name, is still in charge of our air supply.
Uh-oh. Hey, my doctor friend in New Jersey, a childhood friend of mine, he was a surfer, and he has the usual rotator, he's got shoulder problems, and he's been waiting, putting off a replacement shoulder because he says that the technology for building the replacement from your own cells is just like right on the cusp. So he's put off the surgery for 4 or 5 years, but he also says that from what he sees in this area of what you call centenarian research, which has become real popular as the baby boomers are getting into their 80s or late 70s, he says that medical research, especially with respect to stem cell replacement and things like that, will make it possible for you and I to live to be 100, 110 if we can just make it for the next 5 years. He says a lot of things on the drawing board, medically speaking, are going to be in play in just a few years, and that they will expand the lifespan of those of us who are still having conversations today.
In Montreal, they're using 3D printers to make lung tissue.
Yeah, and that struck me. I thought that the 3D printers were being expended mostly on printing up little plastic teddy bears that would be on your keychain. That to me was the 3D printer, and of course later on we had this is not too terribly long ago, we had published plans to print your own handgun, 9mm, 38, whatever, and of course it would have no serial number, be untraceable. So 3D printing has come a ways, but in my own college magazine, they were talking about tissue printing and how it's a remarkable technology that's allowing substitute parts to take a big leap.
Can I print myself a new, younger face?
I'm sure you can do that already. Oh. You just have to go to Hollywood and find out who the renowned surgeon, plastic surgeons are.
Yes, I wondered how Kate Beckinsale looks so young.
Yeah. I think they it's always mixed results, though, you know.
Yeah.
And when I look, the best. Best face job that I've seen so far was actually a face job reversal. It was Renee Zellweger, uh-huh. And she had a very distinctive face with her cute little squinchy eyes, and she had her face so completely redone that she didn't even look like Renee Zellweger, but she does again. So she must have gone to the surgeon and said, look, whatever you do, I want it to be 100% reversible. And she's the biggest success story that I've seen.
We'll talk about Bitcoin when we return.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, Bitcoin had a great rise going well into the 120s, now around in the low 90s, where it was at this time at the start of the year. What's the story with Bitcoin?
Well, I just love to see Bitcoin get pounded. As you know, I've never been a big believer in Bitcoin. It has intrinsically zero value, and it's functioned purely as a speculative vehicle rather than a means of transacting. However, yeah, there has been growth in transactional demand in the netherworld, and that's, I think, probably the best story to explain why Bitcoin's getting hit so badly. It's currently trading $86,000 per, and I think it's going to go down to 67,000 and change before we find out what it's going to do next. But I think the best explanation I've heard for why Bitcoin is getting hit so hard is that it has served as the medium, the payment medium for the whole world of deep state and all the NGOs, and I include the CIA in that group. So everybody in on the game, all the shadowy players, sleazeballs, thieves, scumbags, they've all been in on Bitcoin since the only other people who knew about it were teenagers. And because Trump has put such a hard squeeze on the funding sources for all these NGOs, first by killing USAID, they've had to cash out their Bitcoin hoard in order to raise money simply to survive in their little cockroach warrens. So Bitcoin has come out of their digital wallets, which had not seen any use really since the inception of Bitcoin. And that's what's happening. Bitcoin is being converted into currency to finance operating costs for some of these shadowy players.
Now, there's talk that perhaps governments will go to digital currencies, and things like Bitcoin will be part of that. Stable coins are, again, is there a lot of smoke and mirrors here, or is there a strong reality to it?
Oh, who knows? We've already got a fake currency, the dollar, that does just fine. And the dollar, it would be hard to compare the dollar to Bitcoin in terms of fungibility and credibility. Of course, the dollar is not really backed by anything. It's technically an IOU. For Bitcoin, you could at least say that it owes nobody. It's not encumbered by debt at its creation. So in that way, I suppose it has an advantage over a dollar that is fundamentally worthless. Bitcoin is too, but at least there's not $26 of debt behind every single Bitcoin that is mined. So it's just idle speculation to try to figure out whether the government's going to incorporate Bitcoin or not. But I wouldn't factor it into your decision to hold Bitcoin.
Are we seeing a so-called Santa rally in the stock markets?
I hate the Santa rally, the very term. You know, the fact that the biggest, the strongest economy in the world actually needs the Santa rally to survive every year. It's like the retail trade does a huge fraction of its business every year during the Christmas season, and that's really pretty pathetic when you think about it. That this country runs on purchase of neckties and toasters. we've moved on, really. It exists economically on replacement of things that are designed to wear out pretty quickly, like washing machines and refrigerators and dryers. And seasonality is at gale force right now, and if you accept that, you have to notice that on the day when seasonality should be most exuberantly celebrated, namely Friday, Fridays have been pretty dead lately. So I think that adds to the story I've been putting out for a while, which is that the market is in a topping process.
When you talk about things running out, I remember U.S. built cars in the 1960s definitely were built to fall apart after 2 years. They'd start to rattle, except they didn't anticipate somebody like my father, a mechanic, who would rip a car apart to its very core to find that rattle and fix it. And that's why our family cars lasted 30 years.
Well, you know, you had some exceptional cars that were not only I don't know if they were intentionally built to last forever, but they have. Two standouts from the mid-60s were the Dodge Dart and the Plymouth Valiant. They were kind of the same car. But the Dart, 67, maybe 66, you can't really beat it for longevity. And it's a car that no one actually collected, but people did hold on to them because they were very drivable for a lot of years. So I think that was the epitome of durability in cars. And I had one myself in the 2000 Lexus SUV, the RX 300. I had one of those, and I sold it with about 230,000 miles on it, and the only thing I'd replaced was the motor that puts the windows up. The door lock actuator. And there's a BMW where you had to replace window motors. But any case, that 2000 RX 300 was a tank. You couldn't kill it. And it didn't happen in subsequent models of the Lexus. It's almost like an accident when they somehow design a car where everything hangs together so well that the car does not literally destroy itself with age and miles. So, but now, of course, nothing, washing machines or cars, is going to outlast the chips that power them, and that's going to be a huge problem because nobody's inventorying all these chips. And I've seen an instance, my doctor friend, the one with the bad shoulder, he drives a $135,000 Lexus Plaid. And I think that's what they're worth in any case. But he got it replaced because the seatbelt wouldn't work. And it turns out that the seatbelt works on a chip to tell it how much to retract or when to do this or that. And since it was a part that was critical to the safety of the car, his dealer gave him a new car. He had a red Lexus, and then one day, and then the next day, he had a white one. So these chips are going to be a huge problem because the manufacturers are dependent on companies outside of themselves to produce a key component of the cars. So, and one thing people have noticed who paid up for an $8,000 refrigerator is that the chips that they use in those refrigerators are not deluxe chips that are specially made for $8,000 refrigerators. They're the same ones that are made for the $600 refrigerator. And, for that reason, the $8,000 refrigerator can fail as quickly and as frequently as a cheapo model. So welcome to the chip-based world.
Wow, a seatbelt dependent on a chip. Well, I bet you your toaster has more computing power than Apollo 11.
Not mine. I'm going to put in a plug for it. I think it's the brand is Magilux, Magilux. And I got tired of just toast that was unevenly toasted and all that. So I bought the Magilux, and the trick is that the heating coils in it, they're spaced so tightly that you get very even toasting, relatively quick toasting. It's a great toaster. It's the first I've ever owned, and it beats the GE toaster oven hands down because, as you know, it can take about 26 minutes to make a piece of toast in that thing.
Hmm. Rick, what kind of stock market do you see in the new year?
I think we're going to see a collapse in Q1. We're stretched really thin. I think Trump's credibility will be increasingly slack because he seems to have been betting the ranch here on this affordability thing. And I didn't watch his whole speech last night, but I watched just a part of it where he was showing all the progress on the inflation front. But it was a fraud, really, because his graphics were, it was something that showed as six or seven different items just to fill out the whole, your TV screen. It showed how much the price of whatever, sugar and potatoes and carrots have come down. So here he's got these six or seven things in the grocery store that you get at the grocery store, but nowhere was there a chart talking about how medical costs and car insurance and house insurance are coming down. So Trump's whole, and I like Trump. I voted for him twice. No matter what he does, I would vote for him a third time. But the whole affordability thing is not only a losing issue, it's a complete fraud. He can't do anything to affect the kind of affordability problems that are impacting on most Americans, meaning more than 50% of America's, a lot more than 50% of America's middle class. I mean, they can find plenty of substitutes for lettuce or carrots that seem to be overpriced, but it's a lot tougher to line up medical insurance that's somehow affordable. So he's taken on the wrong issue. He can't really much affect it other than in the trivial ways that he was graphically illustrating in last night's speech. So the whole bull market, and for that matter, the purchase of treasury bonds by people by investment entities outside the U.S. is extremely Trump dependent. And so just a small move downward in Trump's credibility is going to be impacting the market. I think that's begun already, to the point that Freaky Fridays have become kind of boring Fridays. And you just feel like there's some weight sitting on this market.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, indeed a pleasure, Jim. I always enjoy our conversations and the chance to connect with your vast audience.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.